Let's see, just a couple of things that I said to the group, the health session. I kept remembering things to say the more people left. So, one thing on chronic myelogenous leukemia. Chronic myelogenous leukemia and leukemoid reaction. Do you know what a leukemoid reaction is? Anybody? Shift to the left? Okay, it's a reactive process. So if I have a bacterial infection or something going on that triggers a left shift, a dramatic left shift, it can sometimes look exactly like a CML. So tell me how you would separate these out. LAP. This one is what? Low. This one is? High. Okay. What else?
And then leukemoid reaction, you're going to see signs of infection such as like Dolly bodies, toxic granulation, and vascularization.
Sessile bodies.
What's a sessile body?
Sessile bodies are DNA kind of pokes out from the...
That's true, that's true. I hadn't ever heard anybody say that, you know, for an answer. Just a little subtle circulation. Okay. You guys make sure you see those little things sticking out there on the inside of that sack. There, that's it. Okay. Anything else? What, say that?
Oh, the toxic granulation.
Yeah, I can see
that. Negative Philadelphia
chromosome. And which chromosomes are these?
922.
922. Which arms, long or short?
Long.
Long arms, okay. All right, that's information you will want, okay? All right, the infectious processes. Not a whole bunch of questions on this, okay? The most important one being infectious mononucleosis. It's a misnomer. It was named thinking that those cells that are really reactive lymphocytes were monos instead of lymphocytes, so that's why we have the misnomer of infectious mononucleosis. Self-limiting benign illness that's caused by the Epstein-Barr virus. I'm sorry, what? Did I misspell something?
Benign? No, you didn't spell it wrong. I just think it's funny that it's called
it's benign illness unless you have it.
Right.
It doesn't feel benign, does it? Okay. And if it keeps coming back, has anybody got kind of a chronic? You do. You do. You guys need to be smart as you run around in life that you need to be careful. I didn't mean about the kissing thing.
I'd like to see things like that one come. Can you still find it in your blood the whole time? No, so you know, like, is your test coming up?
Those guys, I bet we could. A lot of people have one event that's gone, and they're fine.
Okay.
Okay. So, you guys need to try to avoid that.
You know?
Not the kissing thing, you know, you're way past that, but, you know, to get really run down and let it be able to come back and take over. You know, the chronic fatigue syndrome is also really associated with the Epstein-Barr virus, and that you get going too far with that, you're going to have a miserable life. So I think it is important to be smart and not get run down or not allow yourself to get really sick. So protect yourself when you're around your kids and things like that, or when you get married and have that. You just have to be smarter than you think you need to be, okay? What happens in this is that you get infected, the B cells actually get infected with the Epstein-Barr virus, okay? With that infection, why it really is the T cells, the infection gets going, the T cells have to turn it off. So the reactive lymphs that you see in your bloodstream are T lymphocytes. You'll need to know that, okay? It's the T lymphocytes that are the reactive lymphocytes. Okay, approximately 3-week incubation period, so it takes a little while. One of the things that we have recently seen is when we were all a little bit poor, and the socioeconomical level was lower than what it is right now, then most of us got exposed to the Epstein-Barr at some point in time in our childhood, and therefore the symptoms were virtually minimal. And then we grew up to be young adults, and we weren't affected. We'd already seen it. And so there for a while, we didn't see it nearly as much. But because the socioeconomical level has raised and we don't get exposed to it so regularly, many times we see it more. I don't think so. No, but I haven't heard of any vaccination against it. And it runs usually an uncomplicated course. Did either one of you have a complicated course with it? Just bad, huh? Okay. All right. Well, some of the things that could become a difficulty is you have a fever and your spleen gets big. You have big lymph nodes. You get a sore throat sometimes and pharyngitis. You are beat all the time, right? I actually haven't had this disease. I was raised on a mink ranch, so I think that was that lower economical level. So, anyway, nausea, anorexia, you didn't feel like eating, constant headaches. The problem that you could run into, and we saw this with our teenagers and young adults that wanted to play football, is they would get big enough spleens that they could rupture these spleens. And to try and get these football kids to stay home and take care of themselves, especially when it's football season, it's going to take the whole season, really, right? So you could ultimately rupture a spleen, and that is life-threatening, to rupture a spleen. So that was one of the problems that we would see every once in a while. And the infection from the sore throats and the pharyngitis was a bit of a problem. But we could also see liver enzymes were high enough that you couldn't tell if you had hepatitis or not. So this is not as benign type thing as you might think it is. I think your book actually says that the absolute lymphocytosis should be 40 times 10 to the 9th, so really 4,000 absolute count. This one, earlier we went to 4,500. Basically, you have a fairly high white count. It's usually 10 to 20,000. And usually this hits age groups between 15 and 25. I was telling Max how he had managed to get out of the danger zone. He's 26. So that seems to be the peak age anyway. So you have to have greater than 10% reactive and a greater than absolute count of 4,500. Well, you do have this mild thrombocytopenia in about a third of the cases. So they're just below the 150, which is a normal range, and down to 100. Leukocytosis, as I mentioned, some literature goes up to 30,000. I want you to remember 10 to 20,000, okay? And then the hemolytic anemia can occur also. So this is the reactive lymph. Is anybody worried about being able to tell that cell from... Uh-oh, Christine, I'm going to lose her. She goes right to sleep. You see these little... you kind of get a feel that the stria goes this direction. When you have a small lymphocyte and it the cytoplasm starts becoming fluid and it starts pulling apart, it usually does that on one plane. The other thing is you can see the mitochondria. They're negative images. They're kind of a rod-looking thing. Some people refer to them as maggots. So I'm sure they're not worms, really. They're not long enough. You know. So anyway, those are clues that you've got reactive lymphocytes. They also have a tendency to really flow. Even the nucleus flows around this cell here, you see? And typically, in all the cells that you guys have been studying, you can see that the nucleus seems to hold its shape. Okay, you also need to know this, that sometimes you will see a cold-reacting antibody and it's a little I antigen that may occur, okay? That you probably need to remember. Okay, if you have a 20,000 white count or a 10,000 white count, it's not going to take too much to get greater than 4,500 or 4,000 absolute lymphocytosis. Actually, this is one of the diseases that you look a little bit more at the percentage and see what your percentage of lymphocytes are versus the, and how many atypical lymphs you have versus worrying about your absolute count. Okay? Okay, and the other thing, even though you see cells that are reactive like this, you have a reactive process. It's going from lymphocytes and then kind of medium-sized lymphocytes, then a big reactive lymphocyte, and then maybe a plasmacytoid lymphocyte, maybe even an immunoblast. So you're going to see variations of this here, dramatic variations. So all the cells are not going to look just like this. And that's a clue that you have a reactive process instead of any other kind of process. Okay. So serologically, there's still a test that we do in the laboratory that's called a monospot. We each have a heterophile antibody. These are antibodies that will cross-react with various animal species. So because of this reaction, you have to make sure that you get this taken out. So you absorb this out with a guinea pig. And then you can actually use sheep red blood cells or horse or something that will then interact with the Epstein-Barr IgM. So that's what's actually happening in the laboratory when you do a monospot, is you get this rid of this heterophile antibody that will cross-react, and then you do, with that being removed, then you can use sheep red blood cells or horse red blood cells, and that will interact with the actual Epstein-Barr virus, which is an IgM antigen, you know, type thing. So that's the basis of that. And it's a very quick test. In fact, Christine was telling me, what kind of, is a widget test, is what you called it?
Yeah, they're just little cassettes. And if you use whole blood, they're considered weight, so anyone can do them. And if you spend a down,
very same test, but it must be the site of the centrifugation that makes it complex, right? Okay, as you guys get out in the real world and try to deal with what's waved, and you know what a wave test is? Anybody on the street can do it. It's a pregnancy test. You go down to the drugstore and buy. Those are wave tests. Or if you go to a doctor's office and they just hire somebody off the street to do certain tests, those are wave tests. Yeah, if you want to see if you got a strep throat and you just do a real quick test in the doctor's office. Do they have to do quality control on that? They do, okay. Anyway, it's a brand new world out there of places to try to make it so anybody can be hired to do the test. Okay, and that's a wave test. Okay, so for diagnosis of infectious mononucleosis, if you have atypical lymphs that are absent, the rapid slide test is negative, you don't have, as far as anybody's concerned, infectious mono. If you have the atypical lymphs present and you have a positive rapid slide test, you have it confirmed and you really don't do any more testing. If you have an absent reactive lymphocytes and a positive test, it's really still inconclusive without the reactive lymphocytes. And so you send off to a reference lab that will check for the antibodies. Okay? And then if you have atypical lymphs that are present, but your rapid test is negative, you're still suspicious, but you can have some infectious mono negative. Like cytomegalovirus is infectious mononucleosis that's not due to Epstein-Barr.
Do people really send it off? Because, I mean, if you have mono, you have mono. Like, congratulations, you have a virus.
Well, in all honesty, if you have the reactive lymphs but you're not getting this test positive, somewhere you have to prove that Epstein-Barr virus is producing something that's so we know for sure. Because you could have hepatitis, you could have cytomegalovirus, you could have toxoplasmosis, you can have various diseases that all show a reactive lymphocytosis. So at some point, you have to prove that you have that Epstein-Barr virus infection, okay? So when you do send off for specific serological tests, the IgM, this is antiviral capsid antigen, and that's one of the very earliest serological tests that you can do and pick that up. And this anti-early antigen is also a very early test for the Epstein-Barr viruses. But you do usually have to send those off. You'd have to be at a very big facility to have these on the hand, okay? So your complications can be splenic rupture. Remember we said that about a third of the cases have a decreased platelet count only between 100 and 150,000. But we actually have had cases of ITP that have followed infectious mononucleosis, so that can be a problem. Hemolytic anemia, part of the time, a low percentage of the time you can get a hemolytic anemia.
Is ITP idiopathic thrombocytopenia?
Yes, idiopathic thrombocytopenia. And then Guillain-Barré. And I don't know much about it. Do you, Shauna?
Just that it's a complication. It's paralysis.
It's paralysis. This is not one you want, okay? So, and when you have the problem of the sore throat, many times it's a beta hemolytic strep, so sometimes it's pretty miserable. Okay, so you have atypical lymphs. The age group is usually 15 to 25. White count's usually 10 to 20,000. Kind of know. Actually, read in your book. I think it's in. Oh man, I did look at the page number. Four or something. Look under reactive lymphocytosis. Look under infectious mononucleosis, and read just that short explanation about the slide test, okay, that you do for the rapid slide test, that you do for the confirmation in the laboratory, because it's one of the best explanations I've ever read in any of the books that we have, so that you kind of get a good idea of what's actually happening in that slide test. I kind of just went over it quickly for you. Okay? Now, cytomegalovirus, there's not much... There's a ton of things that can happen with you. And it's a herpes family virus, and you just don't see it that much. If we had a terrible accident, we were giving 15 and 20 units of blood. Sometimes you'd have a post-perfusion syndrome in which, because of all the blood you were using, sometimes we got the cytomegalovirus that was in there, and it created some problems. And it really acts a lot like infectious mono as far as the presentation. And it's a little bit longer incubation period. And it looks exactly the same on the slide. And as you'll notice here, basically all these are the very same too. So you can't just look at it and tell it apart. So you do have to confirm the cytomegalovirus. And you can sometimes do that on biopsy. They have the lymphocytosis usually isn't as dramatic, but you still have the abnormal liver function test. The cells, as I say, look basically identical. You can't separate these out. And so you send off the serological tests or do them in-house, wherever. And the Epstein-Barr virus antibodies like the IgM, BCA, go ahead.
Does it also trigger B cells,
herpes? Yes. And your reactive cells are still T cells. I did look at that. Heterophile antibodies are negative. Toxoplasmosis antibodies are negative. So you have to eliminate everything that's associated with reactive lymphocytosis. Anti-nuclear antibody, this is the test that we actually do instead of the lupus. And it helps us know all the other antibodies that can be present too. So anti-nuclear antibodies can be elevated. That stands for rheumatoid arthritis. Those are not critically important to remember, though, okay? We have to isolate the cytomegalovirus from urine or blood, and then we do PCR, right? Christine?
On cytomegalovirus?
Yeah.
Rising
antibody, okay.
Yeah, it's probably an antibody.
So is it the toxoplasmosis or is it the what?
It's whooping cough.
Whooping cough, the pertussis.
A lot of the tests have gone from just antibody tests to PCR.
Okay. She works in the micro labs, so she knows a little bit more about these things as far as what we're actually doing to test now. So they use urine or blood, and they have to demonstrate the rise of the antibodies to the cytomegalovirus. So, toxoplasmosis. Could you tell any of these apart on a slide? Absolutely not. You just go ahead and put infectious mono. That is 99% of the ones that are actually out there, especially with the age group you guys are looking at. Okay. This is also mononucleosis-type syndrome, meaning it has the same symptoms. Okay. This can take place at any age. It's the Toxoplasma gondii. That's the etiological agent, okay? And, of course, it's more in the third world countries. Inadequately cooked, contaminated meat, raw milk, feces-infested food. That sounds great, doesn't it? Okay. Anyway.
This toxoplasmosis is not a disease.
Is it what?
Toxoplasmosis is a third disease we talked about.
Yes. So, this would be something you'd worry about in Haiti right now, right? Okay, hepatosplenomegaly. I'm going to just skip over this. This is absolutely every terrible thing that could happen to a child. And basically the same kinds of things. Encephalopathy, meningitis, cerebral mass lesion. These can be some pretty ugly things that can happen to the person or the baby, depending. So try and stay away from that. Definitive diagnosis. Okay, this is the reactive process here. So you can see all of these look just basically the same. Let me go back on that. This shows just a little bit better how your stria or your feeling is that's being pulled in the same direction for the reactive process. And here's those light areas, rod-type things that are in the cytoplasm. And if this color was a deep, deep blue, see how nice those would show up? So when I look at reactive lymphocytes, I always try to find the darkest blue ones so I can see if the mitochondria are really turned on. Because they're not in blasts, okay? Okay. Growth in culture. This direct visualization of organisms in the tissue, they sometimes do biopsies in order to see if they can see this. And we've actually had a couple at our facility because I have the histology group too, which work directly with the pathologists in preparation of all the tissues. And so we've had a couple of times where we've actually been able to see these. Serological methods, the ELISA for the IgA or IgM are the most widely used, at least at the time I prepared this. So, treatment. Sulfadiazine. I practiced this word last night, and I don't remember what it sounded like after I got done practicing. So I'm not going to practice it in front of you there. Okay. It's not on the test. You don't have to worry about that word on the test. Okay, I did check that. Okay, infectious lymphocytosis. You can see this one again. Okay, this is a benign self-limiting illness of young children. You have mature lymphocytes. It appears to be contagious. I noticed your book, which is a new book, they wanted to make it more a reactive process than a contagious process. But that's kind of funny because it acts as an epidemic. Okay? These kids end up with respiratory symptoms, and then they go to school and share it with their buddies, and all of a sudden half the class is gone with the same symptoms. So that seems to me like that could be a contagious thing. But I notice your book says it's more a reactive thing. I think it's kind of interesting that a reactive thing looks like normal lymphocytes too, but Anyway, just so you're aware that I did actually read the book, too. It was proven that. Okay, so they're in young children. Has a couple of week to 3 week incubation period. It persists for 3 to 5 weeks. This is a scary one in and of the fact that sometimes you have a very, very high white count. I'll show you that in just a minute. Possible viral etiology and the Coxsackie group, and it's actually Coxsackie A, and they also talked about an adenovirus, too, that could be implicated as a reason here. Okay? No organomegaly. May present with some of the symptoms of infectious mono, but usually just the respiratory distress that they're struggling with. So send them home and let them enjoy that. And then this is the part that would scare you as a parent. That usually they range from 20,000 to 50,000, but can go as high as 100,000. So for your kid to have 100,000 white count, that would be pretty scary, I would think. And it can, the lymphocytes can range up to 95% of the cells that are there, but they are normal, mature appearing, and no atypical lymphs. So, this is what it would look like, and this is what you guys could see, okay? But you don't see any smudge cells here. If you don't know the age, would you worry about this being CLL? You would really hope there would be some smudge cells there to help you know it was CLL, okay? So, if you do get the age, these are children, CLL is old age, okay? So, yeah, they also don't have a turtle shell type look or a hyper clump look. Good point. Okay, after they run their course, sometimes they maintain this eosinophilia for as many as 4 to 6 weeks afterwards, and nobody seems to know why that actually happens either. So Christine says that we're doing PCR for the diagnosis on these. Is that what? No, this is infectious. Whooping cough is the next one. Okay, sorry. I was thinking I was done here. Okay. So, anyway, it's difficult, especially if you don't know exactly what's causing it. How do you exactly diagnose the disorder? So, self-limiting, just keep them home, take care of them, send them back to school. Okay, this is one I've been trying to get Christine to talk about. Okay, this is a Bordetella pertussis infection. It's, you know, it was almost non-existent, especially when we did the immunizations, you know. But then we kind of got, between 1995 and 2001, immunizations really dropped off. People didn't do that so much. And that wasn't even an incredibly low economic time. It just all of a sudden didn't seem important. Nobody seemed to be getting sick, and it didn't turn out to be an important thing to do. So we've actually had 2 Bordetella pertussis in the last 2 years. And that is just really a rare thing for us to see. So you have inflammation of the entire respiratory tract, okay?
We had an outbreak of Bordetella. We had like a lot of cases.
Did you?
Yeah.
And so how come we have no slides? I want to know.
Of the cells?
Yeah.
I don't know that they ever did CBCs on them. The typical cough and wheezing. And then you send out nasal washings.
Now, aren't you a phlebotomist at the hospital?
Just do it.
Just do it, for crying out loud. So these guys have their slides.
One of them was the doctor that had been sent to Russia to be over all of the missionary healthcare in the whole area over there. He was an older gentleman, and he and his wife both came back with it really bad. They were part of one of the outbreaks.
Oh, really? So it occurs in adults, too. I thought it was mostly a childhood type disorder.
Yeah, one of our really bad cases was an ER nurse who took care of the little baby that came in with it. She had a baby at home, and both her and her baby caught it.
I bet you guys wish we'd do our conversation somewhere else.
Yeah. It's out there is the point. Yeah, you don't, it's not an obsolete disease.
Okay, good point.
Yeah.
My pediatrician recommended that both me and my husband get revaccinated just with the regular tetanus shot because they now include the pertussis in the tetanus booster.
Yeah.
Because apparently, like, your immunization that you got for pertussis as a child can wear off as you get older, so that's why the older person will get it. So the most common in the infants, they'll get it from their parents.
That's what happened with the ER.
Okay. So, and that's a good point to bring up. I think the book even points out that we lose our ability to, for the...
Because we all got revaccinated at the hospital when it started. They gave it to us.
You know, by the time they get through giving our immunization things, it's amazing we don't have something, you know. We line up each week for a brand new one, you know. Okay. They manifest like a head cold. You know what a paroxysmal cough is? Anybody want to demo one? Christine, can you demo one? It's really kind of like, that's why they call it whooping cough. It sounds like a deep hoof. And I can't do it either. I didn't even try to learn before I came. But I have heard it once, and it's just a terrible, it scares you to death. It's a terrible cough.
Well, I got it when I was three, and I got vaccinated. Why do you still get it?
Well, you lose the even though you're vaccinated, it's just like me. At this age, probably I'm not still vaccinated for polio, even though I had it, the vaccination, when I was like 12, you know. So many of them are just kind of, they're concerned how long they really do last. Do you have a question? Okay, so it's a deep, almost down in the lungs, coming up type of cough. It sounds like a whoop, and when you got a little two-year-old doing it, it just scares you to death. So they actually even have pain in the neck. One of the things that, you know, and all you guys would probably be parents at some point in time, but, you know, if you get meningitis, your kid gets meningitis, one of the best ways to tell that if you're just at home is take and pull their head forward. It's just excruciating pain. They just scream like crazy. Now, these guys actually have a very, very tender area over the trachea here, okay? So discomfort in the chest, near the bronchi and stuff is just is lousy. Let's see. Jared, can you cough? Where is he?
Yes.
Come on, cough. Do it. He can't in a minute. get him laughing, and then he can demo his cough for us, you know. Okay, so anyway, we have the absolute lymphocytosis, 15 to 25. Here, we have a microphone. See, there we go. Good boy.
Rolling back.
Okay, so you reach as high as 50,000. 70 to 90% of the differential count are these lymphocytes. They're relatively normal looking, except what cells? Shauna, did you want to express your butt cell thing again? They were telling me how you said butt cells. Okay, small mature purine, cleave in the nucleus. Does that mean absolutely every lymphocyte has to have that cleave? No. But you do get an impression that too many of them are cleaved, okay? Usually by the third week of infection. So you can see these here. These are the butt-shaped cells. They're really not the deep cleave. I think I have a couple of pictures upstairs that are really the deep cleave that really look like the butt. But these are usually just sharply indented. And they're usually a fairly common one that you'd be able to find in this 20 to 50,000 white count. Okay. Okay. One of the things that would be good for you to understand is that the pertussis produces a substance. Do you know that lymphocytes recirculate? Granulocytes, can they recirculate? No. Lymphocytes recirculate. They go through the lymphatics, they come back out in the blood. They go through the lymphatics, they come out in the blood. But these guys produce a substance that is a lymphocyte promoting fat. Well, let's see, they use... I'll read this to you, so... Anyway, the concept is that they inspire the lymphs to come out into the peripheral blood, but they block them going back into the lymphatics. That's why you end up with such a high white count, okay? So that's the mechanism is why we end up with such a high white count. Okay, and this is not utilized now as a mechanism to diagnose this. As Christine was telling me, she said, you have to wait 7 days for this to grow out, and you send off a PCR and you get it back the next day. So it's just so much better, and it's not the way to do it anymore. Okay, questions? Christine, can Becky, what else did I need to remember to tell them? Do you remember? All right, you said that so many times, it's pathetic. Just this stuff, okay. Got this stuff. Yeah, we have a list. We have a list. Every few minutes, we make Shauna change the test.
All this stuff about me.
Okay, write this stuff down. I know you put your stuff away, but write this stuff down. Okay, for findings. If she shows you the whole granulocytic series, don't say chronic myelogenous leukemia for your findings. Put myelocytic series for your findings. Okay, and I'm not sure that I try and sit and write SAG, band, da-da-da-da-da, because you cover it with myelocytic series, okay? If you have something like essential thrombocythemia and tons of platelets, put increased platelets, okay? If you have something like, and if you are looking in the bone marrow on an ET, what you're going to see is increased megakaryocytes and increased platelets. We're just trying to make sure you write the right words down.
Because sometimes it's hard to know what she wants.
Okay.
You know.
If you see a dicryocyte or dicryocyte, however you want to say it, don't put MMM, write dicryocyte, okay?
Because that's eye
or tears. Or tear shop, so. Teardrop or something like that. And if you see, we didn't say what to put with the trichrome stain or the reticulin stain, just put increased or positive.
For the PS? The
trichrome or reticulum. Okay.
And in all of those, she wants me to write L1 lymphoblast, L2.
Okay. So for your lymphoblastic leukemias, if you're going to write L1, don't write just L1. Write L1 lymphoblast.
And then
L2 lymphoblast
can be L1.
Okay.
Wait, what was that?
These are findings, okay? So you're looking and you see a lymphoblast and you think it's an L1, write L1 lymphoblast, and then the diagnosis is L1.
It wouldn't hurt to put L1 leukemia, you know. L1 ALL.
I think L1 is just fine, or L2 is just fine. Okay.
And then,
don't forget the positive for two cell lines with the combined esterase. Too many of you guys lost points on that. Oh. And if you're looking at a CLL, and you put for findings, smudge cells, and put CLL lymphs, not just lymphs. If we were here, we could help fight that for you. But this way, we can just tell you what to put, okay? What's this again?
Or just put, like, like turtleback lymphs, you should write
CLL lymphs, okay? You can put turtleback, you can put
sponge,
you can put additional things after that, but make sure you have that, okay?
This is how polycythemia vera, the LOPs increase secondary and relative, it's normal.
Yeah, I'll go over that. I think upstairs with them.
And then this one is, I had told them, because I thought it was just
okay,
a picture.
Okay, I'll go over that. Okay. All right, we'll finish up the others upstairs.
And then this one we haven't ever hit on.
Okay, I'll do that upstairs. All right.
And thank you guys again for everything.
Yes, this is so fun. Thank you so much.